Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Ann Klockner with us again this morning. She is with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org, their website, if you want to get more information. We'll talk about what Legal Aid Works does as we go along this morning. Ann, good morning. It's great to have you again here with us this morning.
Good morning, Ted. What a lovely gray Monday morning it is.
It is certainly that. It is certainly a gray Monday morning. If you're, though, involved with the courts, this is the changes now with the courts, and things are slowly starting to open up a bit.
That's right. For quite a while, since really almost the middle of March, the courts have been shut down for all but emergencies. Emergencies were defined as some criminal cases and also protective orders, things like that. But now, as of last week, the court has issued, the Supreme Court of Virginia has issued a ruling that says we're going to let each individual court decide whether they should open up again and under what circumstances.
Well, and as we've talked in weeks past, there is a lot of backlog, and there are a lot of things to get done. This is going to take a while.
No question. Just because courts close doesn't mean people don't have disputes that need to be settled. So absolutely nothing has suddenly changed in that. So there is a backlog. We've counted, this is a rough count, but I think it's pretty accurate. There's over 800 eviction cases in Virginia scheduled to go forward in the next 2 weeks. This is across Virginia.
Wow. We spent a great deal of time. We've done several shows talking about things you should do to get ready and how you should be handling this. And this was what you've talked about, this, that just because you haven't had to pay doesn't mean that's going to absolve you, and this day was coming.
Sure, and in this community right here, there's over 60 cases within the next 2 days that are going to be deciding whether somebody is evicted or not. So in Spotsy and in Stafford, each has at least 30 cases on their unlawful detainer docket, which is what we call evictions. So already today and tomorrow, boom, we've got over 60 cases in this region that we know of.
Boy, you start thinking about that, and that's a scary thing. It's a scary situation for a lot of people right now.
Oh, it has to be. First of all, just on a health basis, it's really scary to think what happens when I'm not sheltered, when I'm not able to have a place to stay. Am I going to find another place? Is there going to be availability at shelters? Am I going to have a place to stay? So even that is alarming. It's also difficult to navigate the court system on the best day.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be challenging when people show up to those courts. So not all courts are open. That's the other complication of this. In some ways, it would be better if they all opened at once or they all stayed closed at once. But each individual court is doing different things, both in terms of opening and once they're open, what are their procedures? How are they going to keep 6 feet apart? How are they normally, not only is it not 6 feet apart, it's barely 1 foot apart in crowded courtrooms. So how's that going to work? Maybe the litigants show up and they find out that there's a requirement for masks and they don't have masks. Are they going to provide the masks? Things like that. We're going to be kind of figuring that out as we go along.
Wait, for everybody and for on all sides, this is really like you say, because and you're right, as you describe it, the different times that I've been to court to cover things, just the long lines and just the people and the questions, and it's a very intimidating place, and you're right, you now all of a sudden you add the social distancing and other things, and it just becomes even harder.
And I think everyone needs to be super patient when they're contacting a court. I don't wish the job of court clerk on anyone at this point, because they are answering tons more questions than they ever have before. I'm sure their phones are just lighting up all over the place. But we're concerned, certainly for our clients who are vulnerable, low income. We want to make sure that there's really good guidance for the folks who have to handle things on their own, who don't have lawyers to navigate the system, what's being done to explain that policy. Will there be a postponement granted if you need to go back home and get proper equipment? We're going to be figuring this out.
Ann Klockner here with Legal Aid Works. When we come back, we're going to talk about if you are going to court with some of these in an eviction case or one of these cases, and some of the things that you'll need to bring. We'll talk about that when we come back with Ann Klockner and Legal Aid Works. LegalAidWorks.org is the website. We will be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
And Klockner is here. Legal Aid Works, our focus this morning. And we are talking about the courts opening up and what some of that means, and especially in the realm of evictions. And again, Ann, boy, the numbers you gave, scary stuff for the number of eviction cases going before courts. And you just have to think that a lot of us are going to see, we may see neighbors moving out and those kind of things in the next few weeks, just because this is happening. This is one of the byproducts of just the high unemployment and the people losing their jobs or people making less money these days.
Well, it sounds inevitable, but I certainly hope it isn't. There are some laws in place that protect people, even right this second, right now, to try to avoid those evictions. Again, evictions are the absolute opposite of shelter in place and be safe. So the Federal CARES Act that was enacted back in March made a specific exception and said that people whose landlords have federally backed mortgages cannot be evicted until at least July 25th and possibly a 30-day extension after that. So the trick is trying to find out if your landlord has a federally backed mortgage, like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD, the VA, the Department of Agriculture. Those are all classic ways in which the federal government backs a mortgage. So we're hoping that will be an important thing that lawyers bring up when they're representing the tenants, that the judge brings up if the tenant doesn't know about it. If the tenant is not represented, because that's a federal law that's in place right now. So we're really hoping that that kind of relief will be talked about at these 60 hearings that are happening in the next 48 hours in our community. Are they going to mention it? Are they going to show proof of where the landlord's mortgage is coming from? Those are all open questions. We just simply don't know yet.
How will legal aid? What is Legal Aid Works doing right now to in this situation? Like today, when I guess you'll send some people to the courthouse.
Sure. So we have attorneys monitoring the court docket and being able to see in real time, more or less, how many cases are on the docket. That's why we were able to quote you that figure of over 60 evictions scheduled for court this next 2 days. So the attorneys in normal times, remember what normal times were, Ted?
Yeah, barely, just barely.
Yeah, exactly. So back then, what we were doing is we would monitor them. We would show up at the courthouse for the cases that we thought had the most chance of involving a residential eviction. So let's say we have 17 counties. We tried to target at least four of those counties that had the highest rates of evictions. And we would show up at court in the hallway. We would have all our materials with us, all of our Know Your Rights guides and housing guides and all that. And we would ask people, if you're interested, we'll do a quick intake, see if you're eligible and low income. If you are, we'll give you some quick advice. Or if possible, we'll go into court if there's a defense to your eviction. Now, our challenge is that we may not be allowed in the courthouse because we don't have a specific case. I think some of the courts are only allowing folks in who have a specific case that morning on the docket. So we're planning today and tomorrow to be there super early in the morning, to be there in the line that we're expecting will be going out the courthouse door, and just be there and available with Know Your Rights guides, housing guides. What are your rights in the COVID pandemic? Talking to people about that federally backed mortgage exception that we hope will prevent a lot of evictions or at least forestall them a little bit. There's also another law that we are telling people about, which is the General Assembly in Richmond last month passed a law that said that anyone who shows up for an eviction can ask for a 60-day continuance if they can show that they have a COVID-related loss of income.
Okay. So, boy, just that information is just so valuable when we have talked about this, because those were these two pieces of legislation that we've talked about several times now over the last few weeks. That's good to know, because like you say, it may buy you some time.
Right, it's good to know, but it's also obscure.
Yeah.
I would bet you that if you took a little poll of all those people standing in line out of the courthouse door today, a lot of them will have never heard of that, don't know to ask, didn't know where to look for that information. So that's one of the reasons why our attorneys are physically in place there, just trying to get as much information out to folks as possible. This applies no matter what, pandemic or otherwise. The more you know about your rights, the smarter your choices are. When you make choices or decisions, or you're facing three or four alternatives of what to do, it's super important to know what your rights are. What can the landlord do or not do? What can you do as a tenant or not do? Those are all things that become even more crucial in a situation like this.
And those two pieces of legislation are there to help you. And like you say, if you don't know about them, though, yeah, you know, it's no good. So at least you're able to do that. So if I'm in line, if I'm one of those people in line, or if I'm going to be going, if I've got one of these cases this week, what are some of the things that I need to bring to court?
Well, I think it would be really important for everyone to dust off their lease. It's a good old-fashioned basic piece of information that has nothing to do with the pandemic, but it's just tenants' rights 101. It all starts with your lease. Your lease is a contract, and it's a contract with your landlord. with the owner of the property, and it lets you know what your rights and responsibilities are, what the landlord's rights and responsibilities are. So pull it out. Give it a good look. Take it to court, because so many times what is going to be decided is based on your rights in the lease. So that would be the first thing. The second thing would be, what kind of proof of income do you have, or in this case, loss of income, that could help trigger that state law? So it's sometimes hard to prove a negative. I don't have a paycheck, so you can't prove that you don't have a paycheck. But what you can do is show other things to prove that you don't have income. For example, a physical copy of your email exchanges between you and the and your employer, mm-hmm. saying, "I'm going to have to furlough you. I'm going to have to pay you less." Something like that. Think that through ahead of time. It's not enough to just show up and say, trust me. It's much, much better if you have some kind of document or proof beyond just your say-so. If you only have your say-so, then go in and testify and do the best you can. But coming up with something that is physical, like a pay stub with a much reduced amount of money, show what you used to earn, then compare it to what you're earning now. Those are all things to think through. And also, any kind of proof you have that the landlord has a federally backed mortgage. Maybe you've stumbled across that. Maybe the landlord's mentioned that. It's hard for you to prove that because you don't have a lot of the documents that the landlord has about his mortgage or her mortgage. So that might be a little tougher to do from a tenant's point of view.
I was going to say, I was wondering how difficult that would be to find out. And just being able to prove that would be a difficult thing, I would think.
It's difficult. You have to dig, and you have to kind of cross-reference a bunch of different websites that possibly might give a clue. Some of them are obvious. They're, you know, Section 8 federally subsidized housing. I mean, that's just easy.
Mm-hmm.
But others are a little bit more complicated because it just has to do with what that individual landlord has arranged for how he or she has purchased that home that they're renting out. So what we are hoping is that when the tenant raises that issue, then it will be the burden of the landlord to prove that they haven't gotten a federally backed mortgage.
Yeah.
So I hope that will help a little bit.
I did wonder that if you at least bring that up, then perhaps the judge might question them about that.
We're certainly hoping. That's one of the main things we want to get across, is that if you can't even prove that it's a federally backed mortgage as a tenant, which would be unlikely for you to be able to really solidly have the documentation to prove that, you can at least raise the issue and put it on the landlord to prove that they are an exception to that CARES Act.
None of us ever expected a pandemic, but this also, when you mentioned about dusting off your lease and getting something, I mean, I guess that's a good example for any of us going forward, that anytime we're getting a lease and signing a lease, that we make sure what's in that. And you can't plan on everything, and no one certainly saw this coming, but making sure that there are some things in the lease that do give you a little bit of breathing room if something like this or some kind of tragedy happens.
Sure. And I don't think there's a lease out there now that's in existence that anticipates a circumstance where there would be something as catastrophic as this pandemic. But what I'm suggesting is that it's always just a good idea to know, mm-hmm. what does the lease say about late payments? What does the lease say about the way in which you pay your rent? All those kind of rules and little details are spelled out usually in the lease. So if you have a lease, that's great. If you don't have a lease, either because you've lost it or you never had one to begin with, the court can still hear evidence about what you thought and what the terms of the agreement were, it's just a little bit harder to prove when it's not in writing.
Boy, the days going ahead, it just seems like we, you know, as the courts try to catch up and deal with so many of these kind of cases, like you had predicted, you'd said through the summer, you expected there to be just a lot of catch up and just a lot of confusion over what's happening.
Right, and I think there was an article in the paper today in the Freelance Star that said that quoted somebody. That this backup is going to be 3 to 6 months, and I think that's optimistic.
Mm. This is just what you. This was as everything was closed. This is just what we talked about, and again, a lot of this does kind of circle back around to what we talked about. That during this time, if you are having troubles, go to your landlord and see what you can do to avoid being one of those people. You know, on a court docket.
You have said it correctly. I think it's really the best way possible is to avoid it entirely, which is, first of all, pay your rent if you possibly can. Pull together all of your resources and put them toward the rent. That is the most important thing to pay. But if you are in a circumstance where it's just not possible, you've completely lost your income overnight, you had no savings sufficient to get you through 3 months, let alone 2 months or 1 month of not paying your rent, then talk to your landlord. Have that conversation. It's going to be a difficult conversation. The landlord needs the rent money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to want as much of that money as they possibly can. So they might be in a position where they could accept partial payments for a while, knowing that you still have the obligation to pay, but that they would be willing for at least a six-month period, let's say, to have three-quarters of the rent or half of the rent.
Yeah.
Is better than none at all. And the worst thing you can possibly do in the middle of all this is to just put your head in the sand and not confront the issue. You've got to have a conversation with your landlord.
No, it's tough on both ends because, like you say, the a lot of landlords will come back and say, I've got payments to make on this property, and this is a difficult period for everybody in so many areas, and just this particular one, especially because, like you say, you're dealing with this is the worst possible time. To think about trying to find a place and not having the income and just the safety issue.
Sure. And the landlords or anyone actually who is a homeowner who has a mortgage and that mortgage is federally backed, you have protections too. So they have issued moratoriums on the federally backed mortgages as well, that there shouldn't be any foreclosures during the pandemic. So everyone is looking for relief. Everyone is looking for a little bit of a safe haven from just being tossed out onto the street, either through a foreclosure or an eviction. And that's what the Federal CARES Act was trying to do. It is huge. There's lots of moving parts. They haven't figured out what all those parts of that legislation means yet,
even now
after it was passed. Yeah. But we're trying to figure out ways to make sure that everyone, landlords, homeowners, renters, are not put out into the cold. That's just not the right way to handle this. And we're hoping that we can figure out ways that everybody gets a little something to make sure that everyone is protected during a really scary time.
LegalAidWorks.org is the website. When we come back, we'll talk more about what Legal Aid Works does in the community. And Klockner with Legal Aid Works here this morning on Town Talk. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:32.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
And Klockner is here with Legal Aid Works. LegalAidWorks.org is the website. And for those who aren't aware, talk a little bit about the work that Legal Aid Works does. You've already talked about how, like today, for instance, some of those long lines at some courthouses with eviction cases, you've got people there providing help, and that's what you do.
We certainly do, and we love doing that. Our mission is to champion justice and fairness for those who have the least access to the civil court system. And in our country, there's no right to a free lawyer when you're poor and you have a civil legal problem. So when people are facing custody cases, support, protective orders, any kind of housing issue like foreclosures or evictions, loss of public benefits like not getting your unemployment benefits, all of those things are civil legal matters, and they have profound life-altering consequences when you go to court on those. Without a lawyer, you have less of a chance to get a good outcome. Even if you have the law on your side and the facts on your side, you can lose simply because our court system is very complicated. So we come in as a nonprofit just trying to fill that gap, just like a soup kitchen or a food pantry or any other kind of nonprofit. We see a need. We are compelled to fill it, even if there's no particular right to those services. We think it's important for the civil court system to have a level playing field. So we step in when somebody is facing a civil legal aid, civil legal matter, and they can't afford a lawyer.
And the number of people you have and the number of cases that are the potential cases you have out there, it's mind-boggling what you're able to do. But unfortunately, you do have to make choices.
We do. So we cover 17 counties, and that is 51 courts. So each county has three courts. So I've done the math on that, and it's 51 courts. And we try to cover those 51 courts with just eight lawyers. And that's really tough. So we end up triaging, just like an emergency room without enough doctors. So we have to make tough choices about how many cases on any given day we could handle. We have two housing attorneys. They're going to be very, very, very busy in the next few months. We're even considering training some of our other attorneys to do a little bit of housing work, just because that's going to be such a critical need. But the sad reality is that, yes, we turn away two out of every three eligible applicants simply because we don't have the resources to do that. And that's the case all over the country in all the different legal aid offices that they just have to turn away folks. That's how it is. But we try to get as much information out to people as we possibly can. In the next few weeks, we are going to be starting a Know Your Rights webinar series. That is due to the financial support of the Community Foundation. They have a community relief fund that they started back in October. I think they actually had the vision to do this. They set up a fund for emergencies, and they have been giving out grants recently, and we were lucky enough to get one of their grants that allows us to upgrade our Zoom platform to a high professional level that also can do a secure webinar. So we're going to be trying to get more information out to people in the ways that they can get that information most easily.
Boy, I saw that about the Community Foundation money that you received, and what a great thing that was, and in how that just how you'll be able to use that, and just another way that the Community Foundation continues to help the area and helping somebody like you who really is involved in the area.
They made it so easy for us. They asked us a question. They said, what do you need? What is the most pressing need that you have right now in the COVID pandemic? And when we articulated that need, came up with a budget, said, here are the things that we really think our clients need right now, they were nimble enough and really flexible enough to immediately meet that. I think the process from beginning to end, I doubt it took 2 weeks. It was super quick, and believe me, in grant writing world, that's supersonic. It was so helpful. The other thing that they funded for us, and this is something that we're all kind of grappling with now as well, is if you want a document notarized, how does that work? Do you show up somewhere, and a lot of people handle the same pen, and you're handing papers back and forth and close to each other. How do you do that safely? Well, there's a process called e-notary where that is all done electronically. So you have to have the correct software and hardware as a notary. It isn't just, oh, I have a stamp, and I'm going to stamp this document for you and look at your driver's license and make sure you are who you are. Now we can do that virtually, and that cost money, and the Community Foundation gave us money necessary so that we will, in the next few weeks, be able to set up and start our own e-notary service for our clients who need documents notarized.
What a great thing that is. LegalAidWorks.org is the website, and if you go there, you'll see a donate button that you can, if you want to help the work of Legal Aid Works.
We appreciate all kinds of support, so no amount is too small or too large. It's always a useful thing for us to have a community support. So, yes, we appreciate the donations. There's basically two different options there. You can give a donation, a one-time donation, or if you click on the I'd like to be a monthly donor, you can become a part of the Equal Justice Society, and maybe for $5, $10 a month, you could be supporting Equal Justice all the time. So all of those are options, and we really appreciate the support.
And I know you're always looking for monthly donors.
It's a helpful thing for us to know that there's a stream of money coming in, and usually for the donor, it's a low amount. They're able to handle that on a monthly basis. They can change it anytime they want. It's very flexible. So that's something to consider. That's one option. We know right now that money is real tight for most folks, but if somebody has a little extra money that they want to do to support this kind of work, we'd be happy to talk to them about it.
Or if you still have money from your stimulus check and want to give it back into the community, great place to do that is Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. Ann Klockner here this morning with Legal Aid Works. As we've talked about courts, I know one of the things I've seen just because of the whole pandemic, telephone hearings or something that are out there is what describe what that is or how you get one of those.
Right. So there's always been the possibility of being able to hold a hearing telephonically, and it is possible to do that. You usually will see that in criminal cases where there's an arraignment and they will not bring the defendant in to the courthouse. Instead, they'll have the arraignment from the jail. So the courts are kind of set up to do this. They just have been very hesitant to do it under normal circumstances for any kind of case because it's always better to be in person. And the main reason why that is because so much depends on the demeanor and the tone of voice and the facial expressions of the people testifying. There are documents that you need to look at. There's evidence like bruises, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to do things telephonically. So the courts have never really liked it or encouraged it before. Some of our clients find it very difficult to get into court. They ask for a telephone hearing. They aren't always successful in getting that. However, now under the pandemic, the Supreme Court of Virginia has made it very clear that people are able to ask for and be granted the permission to have a hearing by telephone or by video. That's also possible. It's a little rarer to have it by video. So what we're trying to do is we're pulling together a list of do's and don'ts because as with all hearings, you really have to pay attention to details and be prepared. And that's no more true than when you're dealing with an unusual circumstance like a telephone hearing. So the first thing to get across to folks is how to ask for one. It's much, much better to ask for one early as opposed to at the last minute. So if you have a court date coming up, try to get in touch with the court clerk. It's usually a good idea to put that request in writing to say, look, I have this case coming up in 3 weeks. I have an immune system issue, or I have kids that I'm taking care of that have no daycare available, so I really can't get to court, but I really want to be there. Is there a way for me to have this by telephone? So ask for it ahead of time. The more you can put into your request about why it is, not just, I don't feel like coming, but instead a really specific reason, and if it's related to the pandemic, even better. So that would be how to get the process started. Once you're granted the opportunity to do a telephone hearing, then you have to really start thinking about how that's going to work. First of all, I would suggest that you find the best location in your house for not only reception, so cell phone reception if you have to. The best thing to do would be to get a landline phone, which most people don't have anymore. But if you do have access to a landline phone instead of a cell phone, that is your better bet because the connection is going to be secure throughout. You're not going to have dropped calls or fading in and out, that kind of thing. Another thing to think about is not only location for a signal, but where's the quietest part of your house? If you have kids, pets, they're adorable. We love it when they show up on, you know, Zoom meetings. They're just mm-hmm. adorable, but they're not appropriate for a court hearing. So try as hard as you can to get a quiet, undisturbed area of your house. Remember that everything you say is probably going to be heard throughout the courtroom, usually on speakerphone or something like that. So be very aware of what you're saying into the phone or what the phone is picking up. So your little aside to somebody is going to be picked up. Another really important thing, now this is probably a rule in any court hearing, and that is no crosstalk. Don't interrupt. Those things don't work well at all in court, and they certainly don't work when you're on the phone. Another bit of etiquette is to introduce yourself each time you speak. So you can say, this is Ann, I'd like to answer that, or, you know, whatever you're saying, make sure that people know that it's you. You think that they'll figure out it's you, but it's most important to just remember to always introduce yourself each time you speak. Generally, it's a good idea to mute your phone when you're not speaking. It would be good to practice that so you know what it does. How do you mute your phone? How does that work? It's also a good idea to not be on speakerphone because that sometimes is very echoey and doesn't sound right. Another thing that's really helpful is really charge that phone up ahead of time. This is not a time for you to lose the power on your phone, but people do that. Offer to send exhibits that you're preparing and that you think would be important for the court to know, that you can send them ahead of time so that everybody has them. And another tip that I saw on an online description of what rules there are is don't testify and drive. Apparently, some people have been driving while they've been testifying. That's not good. You're distracted. It's road noise. All kinds of things like that. These are just the kind of things you have to start thinking through when you're putting together a professional presentation in front of a judge. It is just like any other court hearing. The judge is going to expect all the rules of professionalism and all that to apply. So yeah. This isn't something where you just get to be casual.
Yeah, no, this is serious stuff, and treat it all like that. Like you said, the good good information there. LegalAidWorks.org, the website. Ann Klockner with us with Legal Aid Works. We'll wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Ann Klockner with Legal Aid Works here this morning, legalaidworks.org. All kinds of great information. Before we get out of here, Ann, one of the things you always, it's become a tradition now every Monday morning, is you usually have a couple of good websites that provide a lot of good information about things we, either we've been talking about or just issues out there of the day.
Sure, and I'm so grateful to these websites and to the organizations that maintain them, because I know we're trying to do that with our own website, and it's just amazing how quickly things change and need to be updated in real time. So I really appreciate these organizations very much, because they make my job a lot easier by vetting and curating all of the information that we need. So the first one I would give you is Virginia Poverty Law Center. That's VPLC.org. It has a ton of COVID-related legal issues, fact sheets, examples. It even has examples of how to file an unlawful eviction action if your landlord has unlawfully evicted you. It has forms and checklists and all kinds of things like that. So VirginiaPovertyLawCenter.org or VPLC.org. The other one that I would refer folks to is NCLC.org. That stands for the National Consumer Law Center. So NCLC.org, they have a guide to surviving debt. Very, very helpful website for people who are really, and maybe for the first time, really experiencing some financial difficulties that make it impossible for them to pay all their debts and all their bills. So that's a super helpful website. Also, if you just want basic access to legal aid information across Virginia, you can go to VALegalAid.org. So VALegalAid.org. And that is the general website for all legal aids in Virginia. It puts you in touch with your specific legal aid in your community, but it also has a lot of know your rights and basic legal information.
You started off the show by talking just about the high number of eviction cases before the courts, 60 in the next 48 hours in this area, and I guess that's the thing to watch. And if you know someone who's involved in facing this, get them in. You know, give them some of these websites, or even go to LegalAidWorks.org to give them some hints, because these are tough times, Ann.
It sure is, and the more we know, the better. So the more information you have at your disposal, the better your choices are going to be. You're going to have tough choices, there's no question. Nothing's going to make this easy, but at the very least, you'll have an idea of what your rights are when things get really, really tough. That's where we live. We are always available to give people advice when they are facing these kinds of life-altering issues.
Well, one of the things that's easy is talking to you. Thank you for just another great show with great information, because these are tough times, and you have some great websites for information and what you're doing in the community. LegalAidWorks.org is the website. Ann Klockner, have a great week, a safe week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Ted. I appreciate the opportunity.
That's it for Town Talk. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.